Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. Yes, but we're going to be going a little bit of a different direction. This isn't just about mind, in fact, mindfulness. We're going to be talking with Vicki Oliver, who is in New York. And of course, for those of you that are familiar with the environment of New York, etiquette, well, it's a pretty big thing, especially in the business arena. Vicki took on a project, and she's been involved with writing for quite a long time, but she took on a project of giving us 301 smart answers to tough business etiquette questions. Boy, every time you think you get to know it all, you find out there are some things you need to be educated on. I want to welcome Vicki Oliver to the show. Vicki, it's a delight to have you today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Vicki, you, in your writing, you have addressed other things. Your other publications were on smart answers to tough interviews, bad bosses, crazy coworkers, and other office idiots, which I just love that title. I think anybody would that's been out there in the working world. What I think is important about this book is that you just didn't make it something that's American. You've also included a lot of points of information regarding how important it is to be aware of different cultural environments that we might be exposed to in business. What made you decide that you wanted to take on this challenge? I mean, 301 smart answers to etiquette, business etiquette, that's a lot of detail.
Exactly. I really felt that it was an overlooked area, and that when you're in business, you're sort of tested on etiquette all the time, except that a lot of times you don't realize that you're being tested. And the way you're being tested is that bosses and colleagues are looking at you and thinking, wow, can I trust that person with my client, for example? And some of the signals that we give off, you know, prove that we either can be trusted or we can't be trusted. And I just felt like it was important to set the rules down, you know, modern rules. It's not like Emily Post. I mean, this is for today. Mm-hmm. Modern rules about how we can just better position ourselves for success.
Vicki, I think some people listening to this might say, oh, for heaven's sake, good manners are common sense. My mother taught me to say thank you and to say please. But etiquette is more than just thank you and please.
Right.
Courtesy and pleasant demeanor is very, very important. I mean, anybody with 50 cents worth of observation skills will determine that.
Right.
Unless they're from a planet where it's, you know, like the Klingons, where you do exactly the opposite. And that
yes.
can happen. But
that's
seriously,
true.
The courtesy is something that should be done. However, in the business world, it has evolved for such a long period of time into a level of sloppiness. I have really been surprised. Now, in New York and in other areas that are what you call in that fast-paced, high-end kind of business environment, that may not be the case. But still does apply.
And oh, absolutely. There's an erosion of manners, you know.
Oh,
I would say throughout business, throughout the United States, no matter where you are, you know, it's just not a very polite environment. But the reason it matters in terms of just self-interest is because if you can convey that you're courteous and that you can bond with clients and you can speak to people you've never met before graciously over dinners, then that can separate you from the other people that you work with.
It may, and the word you used, which I think is very important, is trust.
Yes.
Trust is something that you have to earn. And it is amazing to me individuals will say, well, that's just a given. No, it's not a given.
It's not a given. If there are these little things, you know, for example, do you hold the elevator door for somebody today? Do you hold a door for somebody? You know, who goes first through a revolving door? I mean, there are tons of things that if you really stop and think about it, you're not sure what to do. Mm-hmm. And when you don't know what to do, there's like an ambivalence about it. And when you have ambivalence, then you don't come off as confident.
That is very true. Now, right at the beginning of your book, you bring up 12 tacky things to never do in an elevator, even if you're 100% certain that no one is watching.
Right.
Well, I guarantee you, cameras are everywhere anymore, so there's no such thing as privacy in an elevator, unless it's your own personal elevator.
Right.
And you know there's
That's
nothing
true.
There.
That's true. I mean, words travel through elevators, and you really have to be very careful. If you're in a business environment and you're using the elevators all the time, you have to be very careful about what you share. And, for example, let's say your boss says, how is that project coming along? A lot of times it's just better to make an appointment to go talk to him or her later and discuss how the project is faring, where you're sure that it won't be overheard. Because let's say it's a new business pitch. You know, let's say it's not doing well, and let's say somebody from the competing organization is traveling the elevator with you. Now mm-hmm. you're sharing information to that person that should not be shared.
Another thing you say, and this is just one of the 12, ladies, don't put your lipstick on in the elevator. Don't do that.
Right. I mean, it's not just about looking tacky. It's also that you look disorganized. If you sit there, you're rumbling through your purse, you're putting on your lipstick, you just don't look professional. And mm-hmm. those little glimpses that we see of our fellow colleagues and coworkers, you know, those make an impression. Now you're disorganized, you know, and who wants to look like that?
Well, also, and this goes for more than one environment, don't wear earbuds or headphones.
Right.
Don't make a phone call on the elevator. This is something that you would think would just be understood, but I can't tell you how many times, whether it's been in an elevator, in a restaurant, standing in line, someone has a cell phone and they're holding a conversation as if they're in this little bubble that nobody's hearing a word that they're saying. And they're going through all of this conversation. I know a woman at a post office. She looks at people. She said, if you don't get off that cell phone, you will not be serviced by me. And they have some of these people just have a fit, but it's appalling.
It is. The other problem, you know, particularly with cell phone conversations, is that let's say you're in an elevator. It's blocking part of your ability to hear. And so your voice goes up. So not only are you having a personal conversation on a phone in an elevator that everybody can hear, but now you're yelling it, you're screaming it, and mm-hmm. people really don't like that. It just makes their hackles go up, you know? You feel like you're multitasking. Oh, you're using this downtime in the elevator to get something done. Let's say, oh, you're hiring a babysitter or something done, but the other people are sitting there seething with resentment as they
right.
overhear this conversation of yours, and they're trapped. They can't get out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're really not interested in your conversation.
No, nobody's interested in the conversation. Only you are interested in the conversation. And, you know, with texting, for example, which I think is a less heinous crime, because at least it doesn't impact everybody's ears the same way, but even there, you're in a bubble, you're alone, you're not concentrating on the people around you. Automatically, that makes you ruder. Like somebody walks in, you don't see them. Somebody elderly comes in, you're not paying attention. You know, you're just not at your best when you are texting. I mean, everybody says don't text and drive at the same time. I mean, that kills people. Just think about that. Like your attention is off of where it should be. While you're in the office, you really need to pay attention to those around you and not be texting back home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also, if you're in an office environment that has cubicles, I mean, if you have no wall separating you, there is the awareness that anybody and everybody is going to hear whatever's said. They can sometimes even see what's on your computer, or they'll see what you're doing.
Right.
But if you have a walled cubicle, there is that illusion that nobody's going to hear you, they really don't care. That is so wrong, because it really is something that's very disturbing.
Right. I mean, in fact, you know, hearing it actually, like, sound travels through those cubicle walls actually better than it travels through just regular air. So if you're on the phone and let's say you have, you know, a three-quarter cubicle wall, you feel like you're, again, in that private bubble, but everybody else can hear you perfectly. And if you put that call on speakerphone, you're being even more inconsiderate to those around you. Mm-hmm. And all you need is a couple of people, you know, really thinking, oh, wow, she's so inconsiderate. She doesn't care about other people. You know, if you have that kind of a reputation, just a couple of people thinking that, it can really be very damaging for your career.
Let's talk about kiss, hug, or shake hands. This is a big subject because, depending on what environment you're in, and male or female, our structure of etiquette has evolved dramatically. There are some people, they want you to give them space. Don't come huggy-huggy towards them, especially on a first meeting or whatever.
Right.
And this is in business or socially. But let's get into some of the cultural applications with this. Now, in the U.S., extending your hand to shake a hand as a very normal thing to be done, whether you're male or female. But women often don't know the parameters, and men sometimes get confused. What do you do? We've changed our etiquette patternings to a degree. So what suggestions would you make?
Right. I mean, for example, just this is a little anecdote, you know, that I have on this. I used to work in the advertising business, and there was a male client, and he always kissed people on the cheek, you know. And I'm not a very kissy person myself. And I remember one time I extended my hand to him for a handshake, and that was really a faux pas in that situation. That was a faux pas because everybody else sort of kissed him on the cheek, and that was the client. You know, it just depends a lot on the environment that you're in. I mean, the best thing you can do is watch other people and try to learn. Like, each corporate culture is totally different than the one you had before. So whatever worked in your past office may not be the situation this time around with these particular people, these new business people, or these new clients. You really have to keep your eyes open and try to learn from people who have been there longer than you, and try to also learn from your bosses, recognizing that sometimes your bosses don't always use the proper etiquette themselves. But you still learn by example. And usually, like, the best person you can watch is somebody who's worked in the company for 15 years. That's, like, your best role model, regardless of whether the person is your direct supervisor or not. When you go abroad, you know, it's even more compounded because culture to culture, things really vary widely. Like, the best thing you can do, like, let's say you're going to Japan on business. The best thing you can do is go buy a couple of guides to Japanese business culture before you get on the plane, for example. Like, you just don't want to make some of those mistakes that people make. Like, for example, here in America, if somebody hands you their business card, generally speaking, you know, you just put, you know, you say thank you, and you put it in your wallet or you put it in your handbag, and you look at it later. But, for example, in Japan, it's much more polite to really study the business card. Like, take a moment and really look at the card, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's an acknowledgement that that person is important, and you're just showing your respect that way. So little tiny things really matter. Like, here in the United States, especially in a youthful business, doing, you know, putting a thumbs up usually means great job, you know, way to go, right? But abroad, in certain cultures, that could be perceived as being quite insulting, and you don't want to do that. You know, another one, this is like one of my favorites, is that you always hear here in the U.S., you want to use eye contact. When you meet somebody, you want to look at them in the eye, shake their hand, you know, firm but not an iron grip, right? Not too limp, but somewhat firm, and look at them in the eye. We are always told that, you know, in some cultures abroad, looking somebody straight in the eye is considered to be bad form. And while one can argue, okay, you know, everywhere practically, Americans are in business, you know, they're used to us, et cetera, et cetera. You go further if you kind of show respect for their culture and try to pick up their culture a little bit with business.
I agree. Now, let's dip into something about interaction with clients. You have a section that you call Meetings Around the Great Oval Table. And you talk about noticing the pecking order wherever you might be. And this would apply, by the way, those of you that are listening, even if you're an entrepreneur, these are tips that are going to enable you to understand how to work with people more effectively and well. Clients, you say, the understanding, one has the understanding of a client's title, but you don't know what the titles mean in pecking order. It would be sort of like me trying to go and talk to the different levels in the Navy, and I've never had any association with the military at all, and I just go in and say, oh, well, I guess the guy with the most stars is the general. Now, I know this is going to sound rather flippant, but what about the guy with the one stripe? Who is he? So
right.
You have to know a little bit about something, and maybe you're lucky enough to have somebody that can educate you before you go into it. But how do you handle that? If that is not something that has been in your experience.
Right. I mean, the first thing I would say when you're around an oval table, you know, and we're using that metaphorically, of course, but when you're meeting like a lot of people at the same time, I think the first thing that's important to do is to get their names straight. So one trick I have in the book is, let's say you're sitting at a table, literally at a table with people, just jot their names down clockwise around the table so that your list goes clockwise.
Mm-hmm.
And even if somebody's like, okay, this is Stan, this is Dan, this is Tom, this is Mary, right? And they're pointing all around the table, you reorganize it so that your list goes right around the table so that you can look at the person and know what their name is. Okay, that's the most important thing of all. Then what I would do is, you know, don't make assumptions. Don't leap to assumptions. Like sometimes you think, oh, the most important person is the person who talks first. Not true. I mean, there are tons of culture, you know, corporate cultures where the least important person speaks first. They want the least important person, you know, to air their views.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it depends on the culture. So that's not a good, you know, tip. Like, who speaks first is not a good tip. Another one is like, okay, well, that guy, he spoke the whole time. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's the decision maker, you know. So what you need to do is, first, don't make any assumptions until you really know, you know, what the story is. Try to spend equal time, at least with your eyes, with people. Like if you're speaking, don't just direct it to the guy who talked the most in the room. It could be that, you know, his boss is that woman sitting quietly in the corner and you're ignoring her, which is really bad. So you want to give people like equal time with your eyes at the very least when you're speaking. And try to pay attention to how the other people in the room are reacting to the different people when you're not speaking. Like, just look up. Don't be so concerned about taking notes, per se, but look at how people are interacting and just see. Sometimes you can tell by how much they seem to respect the other person what the situation is. Of course, you know, when you leave the meeting, it's, you know, get everybody's business cards, try to figure it out by their different titles, like who the pecking order. And of course, when you get back to your own company, ask somebody, you know, who's important over there? What is the pecking order?
Now, you brought up something that you cover quite a bit in your book, and that is note-taking during a meeting. Well, I don't know of anybody that goes into a meeting that doesn't take some kind of notes, but you're suggesting that women are really busy note takers. Why is it that you don't encourage people to take notes?
I think that You know, I just want to, you know, start by saying, unless you are the designated person to do that, okay, if you are the designated minutes taker in that meeting, then, of course, you have to devote yourself to taking notes. You don't have a choice. Let's say you're the person that writes the conference report, let's say. Okay, mm-hmm. But if you're not the person to do that, for starters, somebody else is going to write the report. All right, so you can read it later. Secondly, your time is better spent looking at the interactions and paying attention to the interactions of the different people and just having a general idea, okay, here are the next steps. Those you should write down because every meeting has an outcome and you want to figure out the next steps, definitely write those down. But I wouldn't take word-for-word notes because if you're doing that, you're looking at your piece of paper and you're not looking at the interactions in the room. And every business today is still a people business. Like when you're there with people, you need to be, again, you don't want to be in a bubble writing notes. You want to be paying attention to the interactions of the people around you. And a lot of times just by looking at people's faces and how they react, you can tell so much more about what's really going on than if you're just taking word-for-word notes.
In our environment today, there are so many jobs that have disappeared. There are companies that have been absorbed by other businesses, and we have a new boss that comes in. I think of someone that I spoke with recently that had worked with a company for 20-some-odd years with very high regard. Her boss retired. She ends up getting a new boss that is substantially younger, has a whole different agenda, and this person was going through a lot of slack, and this younger individual was not necessarily very savvy. They weren't old enough, really, and experienced enough to understand how to work with the environment of new employees that they were brought in with. This person just was beside herself. She didn't know how to handle it. What would you say to someone that is in that kind of a situation?
I think it can be, first of all, it can be very harrowing. And it's difficult because, in a sense, no matter how long you've been at a company, in a sense, you have to pay your dues all over again. Mm-hmm. You have to gain the person's trust. And, you know, it can be very difficult. It depends. Like, let's say that person has an agenda to bring in new people. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that person is looking around the office to sort of get rid of some of the people who already work there so that she or he can bring in their own persons, right? That can be a very difficult situation. But the first thing is you have to realize that that is the situation. You know, you have to assume, yes, maybe that person's going to bring in a few people that they worked with before. And so you don't want to lose your job. And so the first thing is, you know, you need to extend yourself, stay late, work, get in early, and really, if you can, try to offer to show the person around or to help them in some way. It will really, really help you develop a rapport with that person. I mean, it can be something minor, like, oh, you know, do you want any help, like finding the office supplies? You know, I have a couple of menus lying around. Would you like to take a look at them? I mean, you don't want to nag the person, but if you can be sort of position yourself as being helpful and friendly, a go-to person that person can rely on to tell them how things work there, you will be better off.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to sort of give them so much distance. Oh, you know, they're new. I don't want to bother her. You know, I want to hang back. You don't really want to hang back. You kind of need to push yourself to be a little bit extroverted and friendly without being invasive, you know, so mm-hmm. that you can be perceived as a helpful go-to person.
Now, let's take another step with that, because I know some of my listeners are out there in the job market. They're trying to find work. Some might be in a highly placed positioning where they could use an executive recruiter. Others might not. What are some of the tips that you'd recommend when a person especially has a job? It's amazing the difference that it makes. I was chatting with a client one day, and we were discussing how when you're not working, there is a stress that sometimes will come across in the interview. You got to do a lot of deep breathing so you don't seem like you're needy or
right.
there's this whole energy transfer. So when you are working and you are thinking, maybe this environment isn't such a good place for me to be, that's the time to really start shopping because you don't have that stress. You know you have that job that you're going to, even though it might not be the best. Let's have a couple of tips on that.
Right. So, you know, the main thing there is, I would say, well, first of all, if you have a job, you don't want to ever sort of be found out that you're looking for a job.
Right?
Because that will, I mean, if they find out you're looking, you know, companies have the right to look at people's emails.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be fair, but it's legal. So actually, you have to be extremely careful if you're looking for a job. Like, you don't want to start this, you know, you don't want to talk about it in emails. You don't want to talk about it on Facebook or LinkedIn. You have to be very, very careful. Realize that, like, they own the emails. Your company owns the emails.
Right.
So also, you know, there you are in your cubicle culture. You don't really want to be talking about looking for a job because everybody can hear you through the walls. So when you're pounding the pavement secretly, I mean, do it via your cell phone. Keep your cell phone on vibrate. When the call comes in, you know, to go meet the person, like, go outside the building and just take the call there. Or tell the person you call them right back in 2 minutes, you know, and run to a coffee shop, someplace where you're not going to be overheard. That's, like, really, really essential.
Well, and I would say it's very important if you have a habit, let's say, of going to a certain Starbucks or coffee shop, what have you. People there may get to know you, and if your fellow colleagues go to the same place, they may not plan on hearing it, but they might overhear your conversation. And again, we go full circle back to the fact when you're on a cell phone, you have to remember, unless you are in the privacy of your own home or in your car or someplace where there's nobody else around, you just don't know
right.
who is going to be standing, just like the elevator talk you described.
Right.
Who's
you have to be very, very careful that the word yes. doesn't get out, especially if you are worried about losing your job. It could become a self-fulfilling prophecy kind of a thing where somebody
Absolutely.
Finds out that you're searching and then, you know, they're like, well, she's searching anyway, you know, let's
mm-hmm.
just cut her, right? So you don't want that to happen, of course.
Right.
Another thing I would say is, you know, be careful about, on the same vein, like be careful about taking numerous interviews during odd hours. Like, you don't want to be running over someplace at 10 o'clock in the morning from your job, you know, on, oh, I've got a doctor's appointment here, I have an appointment there. You know, you have to be sort of, just realize that you don't want to break your normal pattern of being like a great employee who comes in on time and does her work.
Absolutely. You have a wonderful section in your book, and I know we're getting close to completing our chat this morning, Vicki. You talk about blogs. You talk about etiquette for just about every level of electronic technology that we have. You go into the dress etiquette. I love the quote that you had there. It's pretty hard to look good in threadbare clothes. So you have a nice little quote about that. And you've got so much good information that really, I think, can make such a difference for people. And I wouldn't care whether they were self-employed or they were working for a Fortune 500 company. It doesn't make any difference. Good etiquette is important. And some rules have changed, like you mentioned earlier. Today, it's not guys that open the doors. The gals
right.
and the guys are on equal footing. If a gal is the first one through, that's fine.
Right.
And that is because, as American women, we have really worked towards having gender equality in the workplace. Now, it's not 100% there, but it is something where that's what you do. You
that's
just
what
have
you
to
do.
Be aware of those things. So a lot of what used to be done is not necessarily what is going to happen.
Right.
So depending on where you are, what part of the country you are located in, and what country you are going to be visiting or perhaps doing business in, there's all those subtle nuances. The more that you can learn about it, the better it is. Now, Vicki, you have a website. It's VickiOliver.com, and Vicki is spelled with a Y, V-I-C-K-Y, Oliver.com. And people can go there, find out more information about your other publications, which is they're just really great. And I'm so delighted you were able to spend time with me this morning. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me back. I really appreciate it.
Vicki Oliver. Check out her website, VickiOliver.com. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. More good things to share with you. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. Well, the Northwest Women's Show is evolving, and those of you that have been listening to the ads that have been playing every day, it's getting really exciting. This is one of the more dynamic events in the Pacific Northwest oriented towards women. It is absolutely phenomenal. On Friday, I will be presenting, March the 1st, I will be presenting a three-hour women's forum, and we're going to have six speakers, each of them very different. We'll be talking about everything from fashion to dog mushing. You're hearing me right. It's a very eclectic grouping of people, and if you'd like to learn more, just come on down. It is being held at the CenturyLink Convention Center. Check out NorthwestWomenshow.com, and you will be able to get all the information about parking. I just got an email blast. If you're planning on coming out on Saturday, be aware there is a huge ball game that's going to be played on Saturday, and if you get to the show early, before 3 o'clock, you'll pay the standard parking fee. From 3 o'clock on, they're charging $40 a car. You're hearing me right. So if you're planning on coming out on Saturday, just be aware that because of the game, come on out early. Don't wait till the latter part because you are going to be paying a hefty increase in a parking fee. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz at 888-627-6008, and I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Guests coming up this week, tomorrow, we are going to be talking with Susan Fochel, and her book is called Fear of Beauty. Now, this is a novel that is about a Middle Eastern setting, and Susan has put a lot of fact into this novel about a woman, her place, and an inside look into a culture that many, many people have very little knowledge about. Also, we're going to be talking about healthy calendar diabetic cooking. Now, diabetes has become such a significant issue. The reason being, what we eat is what affects us the most importantly. And in much of the American lifestyle, fast food has become the big deal. So intake of foods, lack of exercise, etc., contribute to perhaps an unhealthy physiological state. So this is something that Laura, Ron Danelli Hamilton is going to be discussing with us about seasonal foods, how to incorporate them into our diet so we can achieve a balance with our own wellness. And then we're going to be talking on Thursday with Saul Salias Fassi. Now, Saul is a man I've had on my show before. He's a historian. And he took on a project that's taken him years to do, and it's about Islam leaders. So we're going to be dipping into a bit of history on the Middle East. And then on Friday, because I am going to be at the Women's Show, we're going to be having a Best of Donna. And we will be replaying the show from last Friday on disease symbology, etc. So we've got a wonderful lineup of guests. And, of course, we are going to be coming right in to springtime. And with that, we're going to have a wonderful listing of shows, and you can always check on bbsradio.com, tap the button that says Show Information, and you'll find out who is coming online. In the interim, you can give me a call if you'd like to chat at 888-627-6008. Well, I wanted to share some superstitions about things, and so often they crop up. We never know why. Sometimes these things come up. Every culture will have their own particular belief system. Have you ever heard the one where if your left hand itches, the palm of the left hand itches, money's coming in? If the palm of right hand itches, the money's going out. If they both itch, you got it coming in and you got it going out. There is the habit, and I was taught this when I was a child because of my Italian background, throwing salt over the shoulder, also putting salt in the house. If you were moving into a new house. With some cultures, it might be burning sage. Well, these are some superstitions that I got a kick out of because they come from different parts of the world. And this about food. If you eat all the corners of your bread, you'll have a good relationship with your mother-in-law. This comes from Romania. I wonder who thought that one up. But anyway, your belief systems really have an impact on your life. And in Korea, they say do not eat damaged or asymmetrical food when pregnant or your baby will be ugly. Now, where do you think that came from? Well, if you give a little bit of thought to that, when you go back into history and people did not have a way of refrigerating food, or sometimes food gets fungus on it, etc. So it actually probably started because they were aware of certain properties with food that you needed to pay attention to so that you didn't get sick. Anyway, that's just a Donna opinion here. But after someone dies, the crops in a storehouse should be shoveled and the wine in the cellar shaken. Otherwise, the grain will not grow and the wine will go sour. That's from Germany. And from Canada, if a pregnant woman craves fish and doesn't eat it, her baby will be born with the head of a fish. Okay, I don't know. I'm not going to have any Donna logic with that one, but maybe you could figure that one out. After eating a soft-boiled egg, push the spoon through the empty shell's bottom to let out the devil. That was from England. I have never heard of that one. Have you ever heard of that one? And last but not least, throwing rice at a newly married couple encourages any jealous spirits that might be hovering nearby to eat, rather than bother the bride and the groom. You know what happened years ago? This was so funny to me. There was a wedding, because as a minister, I do weddings. And there was this wedding, and the people at the wedding said, no rice being thrown because we don't want birds to die. Apparently, there had been a report that when birds eat the raw rice, it can kill them. So they didn't have rice thrown. They threw confetti or something else. But fascinating items, cultures. And we were talking about that earlier. What is a culture's particular demeanor? What is important to them? And being aware of that can make all the difference in the world. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. One of the things about diets that comes up so frequently, and I'll tell you, I had an experience with this recently, and that is we forget we need sleep. It is so important we get rest. I think as Americans, we feel like we're supposed to be like the tireless Energizer bunny, and you reach a point where you actually get blotto. Has that ever happened to you? Well, it has happened to me occasionally. Finally, as I'm maturing, I'm getting a little wiser and learning just to shut down. Because when my energy's up, I'm going to get twice as many, three times as many projects done, because I'm going to have the focus and the concentration. And I think that's something, male or female, we need to honor and respect our bodies. Because if you don't get enough sleep, you definitely are going to pay the piper big time. So take care of yourself. Also, here's a little bit of what I call helpful information, and you may or may not be aware of it. Of course, we all know how good chocolate is, and historically, go back into South America, chocolate was used for a long time. It was a very, very important part of the food group. Now, they didn't fix chocolate like the Europeans did when they got it. They would use it in different ways, but in Europe, when chocolate was introduced into Europe, then they added sugar. And, of course, cocoa became the rage. Well, to this day, chocolate is in so many different ingredients and recipes. It's often used as a flavor enhancer with so many different foods. And it's a wonderful, wonderful item. What's recommended is that you use a dark cocoa powder, at least 60% cocoa content, or you can just take a cocoa capsule if you want to, because it really does have a lot of flavanols, and more antioxidants, than broccoli. So enjoy. Just know that cocoa is something that's very good for you. But there are some other things that I heard about, and I said this is fun to know. Sarsaparilla. I don't know of anybody that has sarsaparilla. Years ago, there was a soft drink that was really the in drink. A lot of years ago. I think in the old cowboy movies, sometimes they had talked about it. But sarsaparilla by itself is absolutely amazing at getting heavy metals out of the body system. And so many of us have heavy metals in our system, and there's tests that you can do to find out if that's the case. But this actually is like a magnet inside the body, and it pulls them out of your system. It's so powerful, it can help repair a liver damaged by cirrhosis. Sarsaparilla. It's also antibacterial and anti-inflammatory, so you can just take capsules at your local health food store. Life is an ongoing, encyclopedia of learning that we have to dip into, because there's so much we don't know. And I'm the one to raise my hand to say, there's so much I don't know, and always be willing to learn. One, I think that keeps you youthful, but two, I think more than that, it makes you aware that sometimes things have links with each other that you would never have even considered. Also, one of the things I'd like to mention when I'm talking about some of these herbs, dependent on your cultural background, you may have a genetic predisposition that might work with some of this and might not. There's not a one something that fits all. We all react differently. Some people react very positively to aspirin. Other people can get bleeding ulcers from taking a little bit, or they'll bleed from their gums. It's phenomenal how we are so unique. So one of the things I think it's important to understand is if we know our genetic background, if you know your family was from Europe or from Africa or from, you know, wherever, you are going to find that there will be patterns for you physiologically that will make a great deal of difference. And all of these things will be part of your personal exploration into yourself. And just periwinkle. How many of you know about periwinkle? Well, I've heard of periwinkle. Do you know that it's good for brain fog? That's right. It improves concentration. It's got a component, a particular component, venpocetine, that boosts the flow of blood and oxygen to the brain. They did a study involving some adults, and often you'll find people, as they get older, they'll say, I've got fog. I've got brain fog. Well, when they used this periwinkle as a supplement with adults, within 2 days, they found when they gave the memory test, they did a lot better. So they feel on the research right now, it's really skirting the edge, but they feel it protects the brain cells from inflammation. They also say they've noticed that it's improved conditions of dementia, perhaps even Alzheimer's. So this is something we're still here in this exploration cycle. Don't be afraid to read, research, check up on things. I think you will find that it will be extremely interesting to you. Okay, when we come back, phone lines are open, 888-627-6008. But what if you want to sell your house? I've got some information on that. We'll be back in just a moment.
Celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Northwest Women's Show, Friday through Sunday, March 1st through 3rd at Seattle's CenturyLink Event Center, where you'll find 3 days packed with fashion, fitness, food, and fun. Each day features life-changing seminars and, of course, shopping, shopping, shopping. Meet smooth crooner Philip Lomax from The X Factor. Enjoy live music from country music star Jared Neiman and others. Learn what the numbers can tell you about your future from numerologist to the stars Glynis McCants, and get a peek at how the Ice Chip Grannies successfully navigated ABC's hit show, The Shark Tank. JCPenney will give you a heads up on trends for spring with fashion shows, and everyone loves those smoking hot firefighters. The Northwest Women's Show, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, March 1st through 3rd, sponsored by Snoqualmie Casino, Safeway, and BECU. Show schedules and ticket information at nwwomenshow.com. Sponsored by Snoqualmie Casino, Safeway, AARP, and BECU.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call in if you'd like to chat with me today is 888-627-6008. The desire to fly, it has been around, well, ever since mankind really watched the birds saying, I wish I could soar, I wish I could fly. Well, we all know about Superman, and we all know about the Fantastic Four, Iron Man, and all kinds of Marvel characters that have caught the imagination of us for so many years. But there really hasn't been a lot accomplished relative to an individual flying. Now, gliding is something that's pretty close to it. And, oh, it's an awesome experience. I've done it. I just absolutely love it. But it is interesting how there is that consistent drive for the single individual to be able to fly under a power that is going to enable them to get to point A, that might be wanting to connect with point B, in a record amount of time. Think of the Jetsons. Ah, yes, the cartoon series that was done so many years ago. They were still waiting for results in the world of technology to develop. Well, there's a gentleman who developed, Ives Rossi is his name. He is a former Swiss military pilot. He's able to swoop and soar through skies like a bird. How does he do it? Well, he developed a pair of kerosene-powered metal and fiberglass wings that are strapped to his back. They are incredible to see, and it gives him 49 pounds of thrust when he goes up. He jumps out of a plane. He doesn't take off by himself, but he jumps out of a plane that's usually up around, 7,000 to 8,000 feet, and he has 10-foot wings that unfold electronically, and he then becomes a human glider. When he turns on his 4 engines, he becomes a jet plane. He maintains his altitude. He can gain height at several hundred feet a minute, and he, in 2006, achieved horizontal flight for more than 4 minutes at a speed of 115 miles an hour. Ooh, does that sound cool or what? Yes. He reminds me of Iron Man. Because doesn't Iron Man do that? But Iron Man takes off when you're watching that program. But he steers it. He uses the weight of his body. And he has a parachute because when he runs out of fuel, he can't fly anymore. He said, I feel like I'm in a dream. What a fascinating experience that would be. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about the fear of beauty, a true life story about a woman in the Middle East and the world that she lives in. You want to sell your house. This is something that always is a challenge. But in today's market, finally, there are some changes that are occurring. If you are in a neighborhood where maybe someone has done a short sale next door to you, or there have been a lot of houses in your neighborhood that have been up for sale, but they just haven't been moving, well, these are some tips that some real estate professionals have suggested so that you can do the best when it comes to putting your house up for sale. One, find a good agent. Male or female, you need to find someone that is making sales, someone that is doing. We had the experience, my husband and I, many, many years ago, had the experience of being involved with some realtors who, one, were not very much active in doing anything. And I'm sure some of you can say, boy, can I relate to that? I've had this experience and that experience. So what you want to do, you want to ask for the realtor's activity list. You want to find out about the list of homes the realtor has sold over the past 6 to 12 months, the style, the location, and the price they sold for. You don't want someone that is going to say, well, if your house is worth $300,000, the market is so bad, sell it for $200,000. You don't want somebody that's going to talk you down and out of what the value of your home really is. And you want to find out about their experience. Also, you want to compare your home to about five similar listings in terms of location, style, condition, and recent sales. Often, buyers see homes listed on the lowest end of the range as a strong value, which drives interest. A lot of homes that sell for more than the list price start on the low end of the range. Depending on where you are, you might be in an area where there's actually not enough houses available for sale. We are having that experience here in the Seattle area. There just are not many choices when it comes to getting homes. The demand is so high. Now, staging your home to sell, this is a big one. I've interviewed realtors in the past, and I know a friend that many years ago, she was doing this long before staging became the buzzword. She always wanted to make a home that she had for sale look warm and inviting. One of the things I say is clear items off of the counters. You want to make sure that you have an open counter space. The place must be meticulous, and you want to take off of your refrigerator any photos and magnets because you want them to feel like this is a place they could move into. So it makes it a bit of a challenge when you are living in the home and you have your furnishings in the home. So lots of times it is just possible that you need to remove some things from the home so that there's more of a sense of spacing, you know, spaciousness, and you're showcasing your house. So if you're in a position to do so, you want to be able to put things in storage. And I'll tell you what, you want your yards to look really nice. You want them to be clean and tidy. Everything must be very, very attractively presented. And pre-packing. I did this with a travel, not travel, but with an experience when we were moving, and I knew we were getting ready to move, and I pre-packed everything possible so that I wouldn't have to be rushing around. And again, storing it out of sight. And also, a lot of realtors now are taking short clips, video clips of homes, and people are really liking that. And your realtor should be aware of the latest technology so that there can be that view of the home and a sense of spaciousness with it. And it's amazing how many people go on and view those videos to get a feel of what is really there in the house that perhaps they're going to be interested in seeing actually in person. So one of the things realtors like to do is take a lot of photographs. And they say if you have more than 6 photos about a home, it usually attracts a lot more viewers than less than 6. This is Donna Sebo. I know that we're out of time. I hope that you'll join me. Join me tomorrow for a fascinating interview about a woman in a different culture. And remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is a world of diversity, and it can be fascinating and frustrating. But it's up to you to choose. That's where being open to learning new things can make your world a very exciting one. God bless. Have a magnificent day. We'll be chatting tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.